Broadcasting live from Kong 2, colon, the Trench. This is Pop Culture Reference, your one-stop reference for all things pop culture. I'm one of your hosts, Seamus Connolly.
And I'm Garrett Strother.
And we have nothing to offer you today, but maybe the best legendary MonsterVerse movie that I have... You know what? Definitively the best MonsterVerse legendary movie that I have seen in theaters. Let's say that. How about that?
Well, I cannot say the same because I'm a man of culture.
you learned early. You did your homework back in the days. I am jealous of that Kong Skull Island theater experience, but Godzilla X Kong colon the New Empire was a pretty damn good consolation prize.
I am shocked about how much I was kind of dreading going to this movie and how hyped I was leaving the theater. And I think you and I have not addressed this yet, but no news this week.
Yes.
Just Godzilla Kong. So, official transition into the main segment where we could continue this conversation.
Ooh, let's do it.
For today's main segment, we're going to be talking about Godzilla Kong. Apparently, the X is silent, the new empire.
What? Is that true?
Adam Wingard said,
dumb.
Is that the X
Get
is silent.
Godzilla X Kong sounds cooler to me. Am I crazy?
I mean, no. It's
Godzilla
cool.
Kong?
I think Godzilla X Kong is better, although I will say, without getting into spoilers, I think maybe they could have flipped Kong and Godzilla's names.
Yes, I'll agree with you on that one. I think that to the betterment of this movie, I think there was a ratio change between maybe the last Godzilla Kong crossover movie that we've had, and I really appreciated it, actually. All of the stuff that we've been, like all the Monarch stuff that we've been covering lately and the rewatches that me and you have individually undertaken before this movie, I think we've adequately prepped ourselves for this new movie, and it really paid off that they were focusing on one of these guys more over the other.
Well, listeners may not have been listening all the way back when we covered Godzilla v. Kong, or Godzilla versus Kong, whichever, I don't remember which movies
the
have
versus
v versus
is silent, Garrett.
Godzilla Kong, end of movie title.
colon, end of movie title.
I really did not like Godzilla versus Kong. I didn't like it when it came out. I rewatched it this week before we went to see this new one. I didn't like it this week. It's not a good movie. It's not stupid enough. A common problem is that it takes itself too seriously. This is the same problem that King of the Monsters has. 2014 is the Godzilla movie I like the best out of, like, the two MonsterVerse standalone Godzilla.
Isn't that one the most serious? The Bryan Cranston
but that
one?
But that one's not stupid. It's just serious. I mean, it is stupid because it's a kaiju movie,
sure,
I guess.
Sure. But it's...
Like, it's taking a very different approach to it. I also am not crazy about that movie. You know that.
I mean, nobody really is. Yeah, it's an alright one.
But I love the direction that they have chosen for this new Godzilla X Kong. It is crazy to me that it has taken us this many MonsterVerse movies to find the perfect distillation of kaiju insanity that it knows you can just like, as we mentioned, Meg 2, The Trench, when you're already an insane gonzo blockbuster, you can do as many weird genre pastiches as you like, and in fact, the more blocks you stack on that tower, the higher your returns are, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. The transition since that first one, the shedding of, like, one by one, one project by each project, they're just, like, getting a little more close to the mark. They're getting a little, they're experimenting with just the ratios of how goofy and action-y it can get. And it only took them 10 whole years from the first one to actually kind of stick the landing. And if they can just, if they stop with the formula, they've gotten the recipe down, if they can just keep giving us that, then I am all on board for whatever they want to give us. More Monarch, even, a show that really came around for me in the end. If you make it more like this and you just keep going, I'm just going to keep seeing it, probably. They could Avengers this and I'd be pretty on board.
And I think It's worth noting, you and I were discussing this before the show, that the two recent things that we have liked the best of the MonsterVerse, Monarch and this, Godzilla X Kong, are the two that are the most connected to the best MonsterVerse thing still, Kong Skull Island, which Jordan Vogt Roberts understood right out the gate what a fresh new take on the Kong story could be and how it could tie into a larger universe in a really satisfying way. He is the one who came up with the 70s setting with all of the quirks of Skull Island, a complete departure from what Legendary was originally planning. And frankly, if they had not had the faith in him, a unproven blockbuster director, to really come in and make that universe his own, I don't think that this movie would have happened. I don't think we would have gotten to even Godzilla vs. Kong, let alone Godzilla X Kong.
No, yeah, completely agree. I think all of the best parts of even the projects since Skull Island that we do not like, any redeeming factors pretty much tie back to what Skull Island was able to introduce into this franchise, and I love it. I damn, like, even just rewatching it for the first time in so long, Skull Island, that is, for this new one, I had such a blast. I didn't really feel the need to go to the movies before that at that point. I rewatched some of the alright action scenes in Godzilla versus Kong, and that's like the perfect, that's the line. Just have the good ones and the good parts, and then now we're where we are with Godzilla X Kong. I'm probably gonna still say the X every time.
I think that's fine.
I it's just a habit at this point, but I'm very satisfied with where we are. In a time that I'm so exhausted with franchise BS, I don't know, it feels so satisfying that they finally hit the mark.
Well, I rewatched Skull Island after we saw this. I rewatched it actually just last night, and I was surprised both with how much Monarch genuinely deepens the emotion of Skull Island. I know this is not the Skull Island podcast, but I was like, oh, wow, the whole Bill Randa thing is really, like, coming around for me again now in a way that I've never really cared about that character that much in Skull Island. But then, more pertinent to this episode and this film, so much of the visual language of Kong and Hollow Earth in the new Godzilla X Kong is directly lifted from Skull Island, which in Godzilla vs. Kong, it wasn't. And I think that's another great strength of the new film, is tying it back to iconography that Vogt Roberts established all the way back in the first appearance of this MonsterVerse Kong. The way that his hands shoot up over ridges and onto various objects as he's pulling himself up, that camera move and that gesture from Kong, that is directly from the prologue of Skull Island. And multiple little visual motifs like that where I'm like, this is perfect. And Wingard, I think, finally is, like, comfortable with Kong in a way he wasn't in the in Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's so much personality now that's being injected into all of these different monsters now that we have more footing with them all. I think it's fantastic. The idea that there's this space that's been set up since Skull Island that is, like, the action in these more deserted areas, quote-unquote deserted areas, like the Hollow Earth and Skull Island, could easily be very boring if you did it in a bad way where the stakes of being in the middle of nowhere kind of supersede what's happening. But the way that they set everything up, the life that is in the Hollow Earth that they, you know, are discovering, and the things that have been built up by the human connection in however many movies and shows before this, it feels like a space that I was happy to spend like 90% of this new film in. And I think that I wouldn't be disappointed if they kept using that as this more middle, like, you know, they can't shred Tokyo every movie like they used to. I like that they're kind of breaking up how these monsters are interacting in a more realistic way with the logic they've set up with the Hollow Earth and these portals that they've been kind of using throughout everything so far.
Another element that feels very Skull Island, there was a moment in this film, without getting too much into specifics, where we're in Hollow Earth, and I leaned over to you and I was like, I have been waiting for 10 years for them to do Skull Island again. And they finally got it, because Hollow Earth in Versus Kong is boring. It's one of my least favorite parts about that movie. I hate their stupid hover cards. It just doesn't work for me. It feels so fake and rubbery and weird and intangible. And here it feels like an extension of Skull Island. It feels like a real living, breathing environment like you were describing. Mm-hmm. And when we have human characters, which this is a nice little transition hinge right here, in that space, we feel a lot more tactile with them. And speaking of human characters, this is the first MonsterVerse movie since Skull Island to have an actual roster of fun, yeah, interesting human characters. And again, I think part of that roots back to Skull Island. They have some, like, they have truly endearing qualities, especially like John C. Reilly's character and Shea Whigham's character, but they're essentially cartoon characters. And much, again, like Meg 2, this movie has gone, okay, so we've just got our action figures and we're going to smash them together. And they've made the returning characters a lot more fine-tuned and interesting. You have Rebecca Hall and her daughter back from Godzilla vs. Kong. You have Brian Tyree Henry's conspiracy theorist character back from Godzilla vs. Kong.
I straight up don't know if there are any other main character returns.
Which, I mean, I don't think that this is a franchise that demands continuity, so that's totally fine with me. But even, like, distilling those characters down to a more standard dynamic, we don't have Alexander Skarsgård fogging things up in this one. We don't have...
No Millie Bobby Brown at
Millicent
all.
Robert Brown, not a mention.
Not an after credits scene, not a nod. There's no flash of the news where she's like a Greta Thunberg-style environmentalist for pro-Titan stuff. Nothing, and that's fine. And then we get new best friend Dan Stevens entering the scene here as maybe my favorite character that the Legendary MonsterVerse has ever put forth. And I love Brian Tyree Henry's Bernie. I think he's very funny, but he's not getting dragged down by two little kid sidekicks. And I know they were like straight up adults basically in that last one.
I was
going to
say,
but
yeah, like 2 20-year-olds.
Yeah, but it felt like he was, you get it. You were there. You saw what happened with that side story.
Unfortunately did.
But now you have Bernie, super nervous, paranoid Bernie, and the coolest guy in the world, Trapper. And I want them to be main cast for everything going forward. I think they are new best friends.
Put them in a buddy comedy without any monsters in it, to be honest. Just
straight
have
up.
Them just chilling. Dan Stevens becomes a co-host on Brian
Tyree
Henry's podcast.
Just do a mini series where he is just answering questions about, like, Titan biology.
And speaking of Trapper, which, it's a very interesting choice, one of the many pastiches that this movie is doing, is he's Star-Lord? He is from Guardians of the Galaxy, and he has all these needle drops and all of this, like, this fun, hang-loose, I'm a crazy vet attitude, veterinarian.
Yes.
Just
Titan
to clarify with everybody.
Yes.
Which is a very fun angle to come at that from. And I think if the whole movie had been that, I would have been like, this is annoying and just weird. Like, you don't get how to do needle drops. And there are a lot of nitpicks, not even nitpicks, but like actual bones to pick that I would have with that characterization. But because this movie is leaning so heavily into how many fun vignettes of genre pastiche can we do, and how sketch like can our characters be, while being like, Adam Wingard said that he based him off of a G.I. Joe side character, and that's exactly right. I love the tone that strikes. I do think that the needle drops could have been more thought out.
I feel like, you know, that might have just been more personal choices, like, yeah, whatever, I don't know. I think that they were fun, but strange, for sure.
Also, last human character I want to bring up, Alex Ferns from Andor, also from the Batman, the Commissioner in the Batman, who I am very excited to see keep popping up and stuff, very similar to his role in Andor in this movie.
High-strung security expert guy. I loved it. I am a big fan of Alex Ferns now, and I'm going to be very excited every time he pops up. I hope I see it more and more often.
Me too. But with our shockingly rousing endorsement, especially, people aren't liking this, and these are the same people that liked the first one during the pandemic, and I'm like, you guys, I know how exciting it was to see a new movie again during the pandemic, but come on now.
Try to have some fun with it, y'all. Like, come on, this is finally what the peak of this could be, and it blows my mind that it's getting such middle reviews for everything. With the bar so low, how is this one not meeting standards? It makes no sense.
I agree. If you like King of the Monsters, how do you not like this? Is the exact kind of Showa era insanity that American giant kaiju movies do not let themselves go to that point. Usually, this was our complaint with the first Meg. It's like, it walks right up to being stupid enough to be fun, and it's still a fine time. But then when Meg 2 comes out, and they're just like, we can do whatever we want. And I'm like, yes, this is what I want to see. I don't want you to bog me down with all of the trappings of you know, Western expectations. Just give me gonzo crazy monster fights. Honestly, because if you keep it consistent, I don't care that all of the weightiness of Godzilla has disappeared from way back in 2014. In the original Godzilla versus King Kong that we watched for the marathon, he slides on his tail and drop kicks another monster. I mean,
twice in a row. Thank you, Garrett. Thank you very much. Not the same footage. It couldn't possibly be.
I love that this is finally embracing the truly silly elements of old Japanese Godzilla stuff, in that I feel so fortunate we had Alex on in December do that Godzilla marathon, because I was so much better equipped for all of this than I would have been previously.
Very much so. And we got like a little bit of a sneak peek of his opinion on this one, and he was like, it's actually better than a lot of them. And we like smirked at each other like we knew what we were talking about, instead of our boy Alex. But he was 100% right. I'm very thankful we got to do that marathon with him first. I want him to do that with us again, hopefully soon, maybe for the next whatever the hell is going to come out. I'm
Monarch Season 2 probably would Monarch be the season two, yeah. soonest thing, I would think.
Well, I'm locked and loaded. I'm ready for another brainwashing session.
I need to get into spoilers so we can talk about all the specifics of the things
yes.
that we learned. So, official spoiler warning for Godzilla X Kong, colon the trench,
the Way of Water.
Let's do it.
Man, God of War was happening for like at least a third of this movie. Kong walking around with his Leviathan axe from the previous installment. Grabbing little baby funny evil Kong by the ankles and just whacking other evil apes like a mace. It was kind of maybe one of the best things I've ever seen. It really did make me laugh. It was also kind of awesome action when you're Kong being like chased down by another ape. Oh yeah, there's like a colony of apes. That's a big reveal in this movie. But when they're chasing you down with like knives made out of boulders to stab you, it's kind of the craziest thing in the world.
It is such a great expansion of the idea of Kong not being alone.
Because
at the beginning of this movie, and I kind of knew that there was going to be an evil ape, but at the beginning of this movie, you hear Kong's looking for his family. Kong really misses his family. He, you know, you think about that graveyard from Skull Island. You're like, I'm sure he does. He's so lonely. And then you're like, okay, he's going to go down to the center of the earth. He's going to find, like, a nice colony of apes, but there's gonna be an evil ape who doesn't like Kong.
Bad ape from the Planet of the Apes movies.
Yes, famously, yeah. That's Steve Zahn using binoculars backwards.
Exactly.
But no, it's all, I mean, not all the apes, but there is a whole coterie of sinister apes, including Little Kong, who is hysterical. I like the way that he was characterized a lot, because it would have been really easy for them to go the, like, Baby Yoda, Baby Groot route, and just he's cute and he goes on toys and stuff, and he is cute and he goes on toys and stuff, but...
But he's, like, malicious. He's, like, in... He's still loyal to the Scar King for, like, a long time.
He repeatedly sets up Kong to get whacked, essentially.
Like, leading, walking him into traps. Like, no, the water's safe, buddy. Come along. It's fun.
I love that serpent that he fights. That, again, feels very Skull Island. But also, like, it feels like all of a sudden it turns into an anime. That serpent is so crazy looking.
Yeah, I'm loving all just throwing in all these new monsters that we see flashes of from time to time in this one. Even like just as big as it is, I don't know if this is a monster that's got more history than I know about, but the big ice dragon guy that also shows up not that long after.
I am very happy for us, Seamus, because on the bus ride home for the movie, you and I were both like, the two that we don't know anything about the history of are the Ice Lizard and the Scar King. Those were invented for this movie.
Great. Okay.
We have our cred intact.
Perfect. We are all on the same page then. I'm glad I'm not missing some like epic reference from, you know, a billion movies ago in the Godzilla verse. But you know, I liked them both. The new additions, the spine whip with the key fob mind control crystal that he's using to torture the ice dragon. Mm-hmm. That's a sentence, huh? Jeez.
It's insane how if you had said that to me a week ago, I would have been like, we're seeing that what movie? Now I'm like, yes, the
dude, the yeah, yeah, the spine fob. Whip, yeah, the key fob. it helps a lot that they're really doubling down on the Kong characterization. There's a lot of interesting personality stuff between him and Baby Kong, and him when he has his big gnarly rotting tooth that he's showing that he has this sociable element to him that we haven't seen as much.
It's so sweet that he's like, I know the humans will help me, and I will go to them. And I'm like, yes, yeah. Kong!
He knows he can sign language, ask for Trapper to rip his tooth out with a helicopter or whatever. That, such a great intro of that character, too. It really did feel like the perfectly structured fun time at the movies. We were really nonstop the whole time.
Because you and I, the first, that's like half an hour into the movie, we were really into it. We were shocked at how into it we were. We were like, the characters that are returning are updated and streamlined in a very fun way. I like what all of the gore that they're doing with Kong getting covered in gross guts and showering.
And yeah,
off.
Like not being into it. I thought that was very funny.
And Godzilla, like, exploding all these guys. And we were like, this is so fun. And I was thinking at that point, I leaned over to you and said this. I was like, this is really great. It feels like it's missing something. And then Trapper shows up. And you're like, this is what the movie was missing. It was missing
this piece of the puzzle.
Fun X Factor. And it totally strikes the right tone from that point on, I think. I love Kong's traps. I love seeing him really thinking. And he feels so much more like the Kong from Skull Island than he did in Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah, he really didn't get much to do in Godzilla vs. Kong. I mean, there was more characterization for Godzilla in that one. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
I mean, I only watched the key action moments to prep for this new one. I didn't make myself sit down and watch that whole movie again like you did. But it makes sense. We know enough about Godzilla at the moment. When the Zillions show up.
He's a menace in this one, man.
He's
sorry.
Going
I didn't
off.
Mean no, I don't no. mean to stomp on the Zillions. No, that was an important moment.
The Zillions will get their day in the sun, Garrett. Don't you worry. If they don't, I'll riot. But I mean, Godzilla really is just like, he's ripping Gibraltar apart. He's like curling up like a cat in the sun inside of the Roman Colosseum in Rome. I think it's amazing. He has no chill. He destroys the pyramids of Giza in that fight where Kong is just trying to get him like into the hollow earth.
Kong's like, bro, chill out,
like,
bro.
I come in peace. Oh, dude, I love that Godzilla really does not give a damn. That he's at a peace summit, and dragging him in by his tail back into the portal is insane.
Well, I think it's really funny that this movie is very conscious about back during the ancient times, during the ancient wars, the apes were the protectors of humanity,
mm-hmm.
and the other kaiju, the Godzillas and so forth, lived down in the Hollow Earth, and here they've flipped it, and that is a great explanation of that true dissonance of Godzilla. It's not so much that he's protecting humanity as much as he's just like, this is my turf. Stay off my turf. I don't care about collateral damage at all. And Kong's down in the Hollow Earth, and he's not used to not being king. And all of a sudden, he's not king anymore. And I think that's a very interesting inversion that really puts you in the headspace of both of those characters without, obviously, either of them being able to speak.
It's incredibly impressive, honestly, how much we know about... There has been such strategic lore drops of, like, look at the... Here's what all these hieroglyphs and cave drawings mean, and, like, how... Whatever, this ancient feud, these legacies are exactly how we need these characters to be expressing their weird personal feelings about the matter mid-fight. It is... It's very well done. I want to see more and more big name kaiju. I mean, I guess how many more big name kaijus are there left for them to... And I know there's an endless list, but I'm talking about, like, big, big guys that can make a return here.
You want Megalon. You want Drill Hands up in the fight,
yes, exactly. I want Mecha Kong to fight against Kong with his Buster Arm attachment that he has now.
That's pretty cool. His little... I wasn't sure about that in the trailers, but they build up to him getting the mech, and of course it doesn't hurt that we like Dan Stevens so much in this movie. Who's the one who gives him the mech arm.
So happy to be able to give him that mech arm too. It's like, we are happy with him. Like, oh, it's like, oh, we're giving out toys on Christmas right now. We get to play with the big thing that got finished and never used.
I want to, before we completely move on, bring up the fact that when we're talking about the headspace of Kong and Godzilla and them not being able to communicate directly with the audience, there is so much nonverbal storytelling going on with all of the apes and their dynamics, and also, like, between Godzilla, you see Godzilla and Kong communicating and stuff too, and it's all animation. It's all in this really well-emoted animation where there are entire scenes of complex power dynamics playing out among all the apes that are enslaved and all of this stuff.
Oh my God.
And you're totally able to follow it. It's a really, really well-told story visually that I don't think something like the last movie would have been able to pull off. Whatever Wingard did to, like, if the studio gave him more control, if he went back to basics and studied a bunch of old stuff, I don't know what he did between the last movie and this movie to really beef up his storytelling ability, but it is incredible. Night and day difference.
It's wild. I is truly there was a time when we were watching this a couple days ago that I in the theater I was like having the realization, it's like there hasn't been a human character that has spoken a word on screen in like 15 minutes or so. Like, there's some crazy amount of time where it had cut from Godzilla doing Godzilla charging things in the Arctic to the slave reveal and like the confrontation with the Scar King for the first time, and I was so deep in the drama of what was happening that it took that long to register that we were just not talking for a while. You know, the way that the Scar King is truly like a Yakuza villain, like the way he stands and the way he's like making fun of Kong's new human assisted tooth and being like, look at this fake king. I heard him say those words in his, you know, Scar King grunts and laughs. It was incredibly well done the way they were able to do that just physically with CGI giant apes. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I think it works incredibly well. I like that Scar King is clearly a different kind of ape than Kong. Yeah. He's got the longer arms,
like,
and stuff.
Like a chimp versus like a gorilla or whatever. There's like a diversity in that like slave camp of apes moving rocks. It's very strange.
Kong freed the slaves.
He did. How crazy is that? And they love him for it. I mean, Scar King like straight up Sparta kicked that one guy into a lava pit. So I think they were pretty happy to get out of there.
When I leaned over to you, when he punched out the slave worker, and, like the slave driver, I should say, I was just like, my man.
He is my man.
He's so good.
So good. I think just more Kong-heavy stuff. Maybe a little bit more Godzilla, but it was almost the perfect ratio of Kong to Godzilla.
I believe that this is the perfect ratio for me, because Godzilla, he doesn't need, you know, he has some stuff to do, but he doesn't need all of this connectivity and things. And then at the end, when it's time to talk about Mothra...
Yeah, dude.
And he shows up and he's just super whipped and he's like, yes, dear, I will fight the bad ape, dear.
Oh, man. The absolute string on a corkboard work of the ancient civilization that worships Kong has the ability to summon Mothra, who is the absolute wife of Godzilla, who needs to get a kick in the pants or whatever. I think it's amazing. The work they've done to make the Iwi more like the alien tribal religion that worships Mothra in the early Godzilla movies, I think is awesome. The stuff that they do to introduce like this psychic prophet character girl that we also kind of dabble in the old movies, I think is amazing. They're just really setting up things to be as off the wall as they can be without going over Price is Right rules, you know, and they've met that goal. And I think I'm just more excited than ever to see how, like, what Godzilla thing is going to cross over into the Kong stuff, what other Mothra stuff is going to be in for both of them later. It's really interesting how they're doing that.
And you caught onto this whole wavelength immediately in the theater. Before I was even really thinking about it, you were just like, I get it. You saw the full tapestry before you, and you were like, oh my god, I get it.
I got it. And it was a better revelation that they finally get it. they yes. finally understand.
Because you mentioned John C. Reilly says in... And I mean, this is not, it's not just this one line, it's very well established in Kong Skull Island, that the Iwi don't really talk.
And it's like played as like just like a funny joke, as this talkative American who's like lost his mind in Skull Island, but now it's just all coming together of like this telepathic society that somehow survived in the Hollow Earth.
And you brought up this idea of there are several older Godzilla films that have the psychic MacGuffin girls center, and that is totally in line with what we're seeing in this new one. But on top of that, you immediately clocked that they were also kind of combining in this adaptation the Iwi who, like, the idea of the Iwi who worship Kong from the old Kong movies not only being, you know, non-problematically updated,
yes,
but also now combined so that they have a deeper connection with all kaiju. Super great choice. And then you figured out that, oh, so the Iwi are also now the little fairies that are the keepers of Mothra in the old ones, where you're totally right, they have the dragonfly that comes by as kind of a nod to the flying and the wings of fairies. And I was doing some research last night after we discussed that, and in some of those films, they have telepathic abilities.
That's all she wrote, folks. We're finally in enough of the crossover that it's hyping me up just to learn that right now. That's amazing. I'm so happy that it was as purposeful as it felt, and it wasn't just like a fan service nod.
My big takeaway is, Adam Wingard, if you want to come by for our next Godzilla marathon.
Oh man, please. Yeah, we're watching Final Wars on repeat. That's what we're doing.
9 times in a row. Oh, that watching sounds... Final Wars.
Sounds amazing. I actually would like to do that, maybe.
We would, I mean, truly, you want to talk about rewiring our brains, we would lose our minds.
We would know Japanese by the end of it. It would be like immersion, but we only know the words that are said in the script of Godzilla Final Wars.
We could talk about kaiju all day long, but then we try to have conversational Japanese, and we're like,
I don't know which scene was that from. I'm not sure.
Godzilla is protecting the Earth from the other kaiju. What part of that did you not understand?
Oh god. Oh man. I mean I mentioned it very briefly, the Zillions. I think we're so close. We're on the edge of glory. If they can get him in here and keep the glasses, I think we've won. Hollywood gets this podcast, I think.
I really think, because we were saying that going into this movie, like, Zillion's post-credit scene, ha 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 ha. And by the end of this movie, I am like, yeah, Zillion's absolutely on the table. 100% in the realm of possibility.
What other threat could emerge that is as iconic or, you know, earth-threatening than the Zillions popping by and doing their con artist thing where they're like, no, yeah, we'll give you the cure to cancer. Don't worry about it. You're good.
I would love it. Biollante maybe could be on the table.
Ooh, interesting, interesting.
I'm thinking who would go hand in hand with the Zillions.
Yeah, I was going to say that might be, oh, dude, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're already, we're excited and we're going to be disappointed next time if they don't match this energy.
But honestly, we've got this now. You said this to me about King of the Monsters. We have this now, so what? Who cares?
I guess that's true. That is true. We're in it. We have enough to fall back on.
Even if Dan Stevens doesn't build Jet Jaguar, we will be okay.
Whoa. That's a revelation I had not thought of, and I might keep that pause in real time in this episode, because that was me just, like, staring at the white wall in front of me, seeing the universe that you have just shown to me. That is, if that doesn't happen, I will weep tears of absolute sorrow. That is what has to happen now. There's no way.
Somebody, if you listen to the show, you have Adam Wingard's phone number.
Tell
him to hit us up.
If that's not on the table, I read something that apparently Godzilla Singular Point had some influence on some designs of Godzilla in this new one. So at the very least, Jet Jaguar is not completely forgotten right now. I'm pretty excited about that idea.
So good. Is there more? I mean, there is more to say.
There's so much more potentially, but I'm trying to think of any big spots that we need to quickly. There's one in the opening credits. There's one shot of Bill Randa throwing a bag into the ocean from Monarch, which I really thought was going to be a bigger thing here. Really was hoping Kurt Russell might somehow still be mentioned in the depths.
You know, he's in the Hollow Earth, baby.
Well, I mean, he was struck by lightning in the Hollow Earth. He couldn't be just straight up be dead.
No, he's roided out. He's giant Kurt Russell now.
Oh my god, he is a kaiju. He was the Scar King. It's been long enough where he mutated.
There is all of the weird, they don't get into the time dilation of the Hollow Earth like they do on Monarch, but something that I do like is they did keep the following a kaiju through the Hollow Earth portal thing.
Like, Kong is their, like, guide. He's the bridge that gets them through safely.
Which, clearly, they have a lot of newer technology that I'm assuming we'll see developed over the implied further seasons of Monarch that have to do with the portals between Hollow Earth and stuff. But, I was kind of hoping for just a little couple more crumbs of Monarch stuff, but I'll take what I can get. And, you know, the only thing that could have made this movie really better for me is Dan Stevens saying, my dad. Dad, Tom Hiddleston from Kong Skull Island.
Whose name we both remember for sure. Tom Hiddleston.
I just watched it.
I
watched it last night.
He was SAS.
Commander, because he's not Conrad, right? He is Conrad.
Is he Conrad? I don't know. I just watched it 2 days ago. I don't remember.
Because Marlowe is John C. Reilly, and Mason Weaver, like from Black Ops, is Brie Larson, and Packard is Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson. So he must be Conrad.
By process of elimination of knowing literally every other character's assigned name, you've done it. That's very impressive.
Thank you, sir. I Brooks is Corey Stoll, who's also, I kind of was also low key hoping that Miles Dyson would show up in this one playing.
Oh
Brooks,
yeah,
like he
I
did.
Mean, hey.
Yeah, you know, but that's a longer shot at this point. I mean, think that they have kind of forgotten about
thing. How much they have, like, our new thesis is that Skull Island is the base of anything good, and they've proven that. So how are they going to take this amazing idea for more Skull Island era cliffhangers that they set up and just fully, I think we get that in the future. I think we get it soon, and I think maybe in season two of Monarch. We dabble.
That's interesting. That's very
interesting. I'm gonna hold on hope here.
Because it would also make sense because they're gearing up for King of the Monsters in at the kind of light spoilers for the end.
Wow,
of season
1 of Monarch.
It's implied that they're gearing up for the events of King of the Monsters.
Yes, yeah.
And so that would then make sense if Brooks is off studying Mothra, that we could get more Mothra stuff. Because there's not a ton of Mothra stuff in King of the Monsters, to be honest.
No, there's really not.
Yeah, I think that you're right, Chavis. That could very much be on the table.
God, I hope I'm right. I hope I'm right. I hope they keep doing well with these, and I cannot wait for the next round of insane monster stuff that's definitely coming within the next couple of years.
Neither can I. And then when they cross over with the Meg, we'll be in heaven. We will have achieved Samsara.
It'll be like it'll be like Infinite Jest, where we just watch that movie until we die. We'll just be in the theaters as corpses.
Yeah, for real.
But what do you say we move on over to a baby-sized reference this week?
This is your wee baby.
Oh, God.
Burping him on my shoulder.
For today's pop culture reference, we are briefly going to be talking about Son of Kong. Immediately following the success of the original 1933 King Kong, production began on a follow-up, Son of Kong, and was produced so quickly that the sequel released in the very same year. The film followed the further adventures of the filmmaker from the first film, Carl Denham, with actor Robert Armstrong reprising his role. In the story, Denham and Captain Engelhorn return to Skull Island in search of treasure, only to discover a smaller gorilla who they believe to be Kong's son.
This concept popped up again in a direct sequel to the 1976 remake of King Kong. In this film, Kong meets a female of his species with whom he fathers a baby. The introduction of the Son of Kong inspired Suko in this week's main segment, Godzilla X Kong. And it's the first time that the legendary MonsterVerse has dabbled in the concept of baby kaijus, but the catalog of pre-existing monsters, including Baby Godzilla, is seemingly now fair game to include in future installments, much to Seamus Connolly's chagrin.
I had a traumatic experience looking at Baby Godzilla during Final Wars, alright? That was a harrowing experience for sure. Sometimes baby kaijus just do not look right, but I really enjoyed, as we talked about in our main segment, Suko, this new Baby Kong character, and his weird Atreus-Kratos relationship that he seems to start having with Kong. I would like to see more. I think a baby Godzilla in this version would be really interesting to see. Because it won't look like Barney suit, you know, like a mascot costume.
I want it to clearly be a 6-foot guy in a giant costume with googly eyes.
I would be so upset. He's hitching a ride with a fisherman and his grandson or whatever. He's just like trying to get to the battle the whole time. God,
so
I maybe am being too hard on Baby Godzilla from back in the day, but I like the idea of just, like, there's now lineage of baby kaijus, and there's, you know, implications of pregnancies or, like, laying eggs if you're a weird reptilian kaiju. I like the idea. I would like to see more of it, and you know they're gonna do more. Baby Groot, Baby Yoda. Things happen for a reason, and I think that it is at least more interesting in the giant monster form for this franchise.
I totally agree. I mean, obviously, I love Baby Godzilla.
Why?
I would never say anything wrong.
Why?
About him.
There's
because
no reason.
It's hilarious, Seamus.
I'm laughing, but I'm horrified. I don't know.
I'm laughing, but I'm horrified. Hopefully, the new Baby Godzilla. What if the Baby Godzilla were just still CGI, but just really upsetting looking?
Yeah, I would almost like that more. I mean, at this point, I would almost be more upset if it didn't have any elements of the Baby Godzilla that I think is disgusting. If there's just like a little bit, I think I can at least feel that they've put the work in behind it.
Well, it would be interesting because this new incarnation of Godzilla has the eyes on the sides of the head.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So it would be like, would his googly eyes be like bug googly eyes?
That's horrible to think about, man. I'm gonna be honest. Just like that weird old Godzilla dog face thing that they had going on, but modern, pretty damn good-looking CGI version of it. I would be uncomfortable, but it would be very funny.
It would be very, very funny.
I mean will be very funny, because there's no way they don't do that.
There's so many things that we want out of the next one, and they're going to deliver on all of them, actually. And
we're not going to be ever disappointed by a Godzilla movie ever again, Gary. Can you believe it?
No, I can't. Well, that was our nice little a baby reference for a baby topic. But why don't we go ahead and save the rec center?
Let's do it.
Save the rec center!
Now it's time to save the rec center, where we bring you our weekly recommendations. Garrett, what do you got for me?
I am going to continue dipping into the same well from which last week's rec center came, because, as I mentioned on last week's show, I went to a Ennio Morricone series down in Chicago as part of my little spring break adventure. Last week's rec center was Cinema Paradiso, but this week I want to come in with a new documentary that I found incredibly moving and very interesting, especially given the 8 movies that I'd seen earlier that week. The documentary about Ennio Morricone, simply titled Ennio, which was shot and I think largely produced before his passing, but does not acknowledge his passing in any way, which I think is a very interesting tool, as it's a 2.5 hour long documentary going through Morricone's entire career. I learned so much about him that I had no idea about, not just about his absolutely prolific career in film, but as a genuinely revolutionary mid-century composer who was at odds with the classical world of composing that he came up in. And it shows what a singular talent he was, what a brilliant mind he was, and has some absolutely insane pulls for people who were influenced by him. Not just the obvious examples you'd expect, like directors he worked with and Clint Eastwood and stuff like that, but Bruce Springsteen's there, and he's like, yeah, I love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I come out to it at every show.
Wow, no kidding. I mean, I don't know a lot personally about the man. I just know his name is synonymous with epic cinema, like true classic cinema, so this sounds like it would be an incredible watch. I'm definitely going to throw that one on my list.
You should, and I mean, it's both an interesting, I think, access point as if you don't know a ton about Morricone, and if you haven't seen a ton of the films that he scored, it will give you a very good overview for where you can kind of go in, but also it is obviously very rewarding if you have a working understanding of his big hits, especially things like the Dollars trilogy.
Of course. I am very, very interested in that. I don't know if you dropped me that recommendation personally when you returned, but I'm definitely going to seek that out.
But what do you have this week, Seamus?
I don't know why I did this recently, Garrett, but I rewatched the season 1 of the 2005 revival of Doctor Who, starring Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper, and it was like being a kid again, Garrett. I don't know what to tell you. It is such a corny show, and I didn't really know anything about, you know, productions or even more specifically British television when I watched it originally, like a million years ago, but watching it now is truly some of the most entertaining television I can think of. It is the most visually blown out show I've ever seen. In the voids of space, everyone is like glowing for some reason. It is incredible. I get so much more that I didn't when I was watching it when I was much younger. Christopher Eccleston is actually kind of a very good actor. I was in love with Billy Piper for my entire adolescence. She is so pretty and fun in this show. I don't know how to explain it to somebody who hasn't watched it and already kind of likes it, because it makes no sense that I watched it and loved it when I did. It is such a strange show. I don't really like any other shows like it. And I, a lot of times, attribute that to my attitude towards, like, anime is my attitude towards Doctor Who. It's, you really have to buy into the nonsense, but when you do, it's like, it really hits a spot that American television or a lot of more traditionally told stories don't. And I highly recommend going to watch that 2005 gem.
I tried 10 years ago.
I know, it's a rough first season, man. I'm not gonna lie to you.
But I will probably go back to it someday. I think that...
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. You know, you got it.
It's a cultural mainstay, and I like Christopher Eccleston a lot. I wish... With his career, it's such a sad thing about his career.
Oh, he deserved to be a star.
And, I mean, that's, I suppose, the closest he ever got.
He was a one-off Marvel villain that one time, and maybe the worst MCU movie they ever made.
At the time. I was going to say, it used to be like, oh, Thor the Dark World, but now it's like, oh, everything.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
He is, of course, famously also a G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
Is that a fact that I didn't know until just now?
Are we watching that right after this podcast?
Damn it, you've sealed our fate, Garrett. What the hell?
But yeah, I really enjoy him. I will go back to it. I'm putting your rec center in my pocket for a rainy day, Seamus.
I didn't restart this rewatch for any reason other than, like, it is truly a time capsule for me, and you'll be surprised if you really give it a chance. God, I know it's a rough first season, and that's part of the charm, but it is very fun and charming, and Christopher Eccleston is a treasure. So I hope the next rainy day comes and you surprise me with binge watching this first season.
We'll find out. It is raining right now.
Yes, true.
But that's going to wrap us up for this week's episode of Pop Culture Reference. If you want to reach the show on social media, you can find us at PCR_podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube. Any way that you engage with the show does a very good amount for our engagement, so please help us out with that. Next week, we're covering Dev Patel's directorial debut, what I hear is an absolute action romp, Monkey Man. Very excited to talk that with you, Seamus.
This one really snuck up on me. I'm so excited for this. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say and a lot of John Wick comparisons to throw back to in our previous episodes.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting, you know, it sucks that everything now, if it's close hand-to-hand combat, we're like, John Wick, but
well,
also...
Maybe it'll be a Monkey Man now after this one. Who knows?
Maybe. I'm looking forward to finding out next week.
Adios, amigos.